Let's get a gentleman in here now who I was talking about him a second ago, and this is sort of under the radar right now, but you're going to start hearing more about it. And he's had an organization that for some time has been trying to give a voice to a disenfranchised group of people, and that's college football players are a greatly disenfranchised group, I believe. And you talk about a one-way ledger. Coaches can leave at their will. Players are bound by national letters of intent. Coaches make millions and millions of dollars. Players, if they get hurt on their own time, have to take care of their own medical care. Coaches get rich beyond belief. Players later in life will develop maladies from their playing days that will go with them the rest of their days, and they get no compensation for it. It's a bizarre system, and it's totally out of control now. The money in it is totally out of control, and everybody's getting rich, but the players aren't getting a lick of it. And I hope I'm saying this gentleman's name right, but Ramagi Huma is the head of the National College Players Association. And let's bring him in now because they're making news across our country right now. And I want to pat him on the back and talk to him about this issue. Ramagi, first of all, welcome to the show, and I hope I'm saying your name correctly. And I welcome you to the Tony Basilio Show.
All right. No, I appreciate you having me. And it was pretty close. It's Ramagi.
Ramagi, okay, my friend. Let's talk here for a second. Your group's been out there a while. You're making some traction here with what you're doing. Talk about why you formed your group, when you formed your group, and some of the progress you've made to date.
Sure. Actually, I started the group while playing football at UCLA back in 1997. And one of my teammates, my first year, All-American linebacker Donnie Edwards, was suspended by the NCAA for accepting a few bags of groceries when he didn't have enough food. And, you know, we were pretty frustrated because, you know, we all could relate definitely how tough it was to get by. And there was no voice. There was no one to talk to and to air our grievances with. And ironically, meanwhile, they're selling Donnie's jersey in stores across the nation, you know, making the school a pretty penny. And we just had the question, why is it so tough for us to get by when there's definitely resources available for us to have base protections? And there was no voice. We were told that these are NCAA rules, and, you know, UCLA, their hands were tied. And later that year, we were told that if we got injured during the summertime, that the NCAA wouldn't let UCLA or any other school pay for its players' medical expenses. We were on our own. So these were things that at that point I felt like players needed a voice, and I started reaching out to my teammates, and it started from there. 2001, we formed a nonprofit organization, and announced that we wanted to form an association of players to advocate for college athletes.
What are some of the issues that concern you when you start looking at this playing field that I think is anything but level? What are some of the issues that concern you?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, the NCAA has been talking about trying to reform college sports, but never have they mentioned sports-related medical expenses. You know, and I know you introduced the show, you framed much of it right, I believe. And but part of it that most people don't know is that even if you get injured in your sport, you get injured in the national championship game on television in school colors. And that school does not have to pay one penny of your medical expenses.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. Matter of fact, I'm in D.C. right now. We had a congressional briefing on Tuesday. Player from Oklahoma, his mom was up there talking about how they were left to pay $3,000 in medical expenses because Oklahoma wouldn't cover any of the deductibles and co-insurance and treatment after knee surgery. He was hurt during a practice. So these things happen, and it happens at big schools, big sports, small sports, and the NCAA knows it. And we also released a study last week showing that there's almost $800 million in new revenue coming in every year just from a handful of TV contracts. Brand new money. And again, not one word about sports-related medical expenses. These players who are injured can also lose their scholarships. You know, a school can choose to not renew a scholarship because a player is no longer contributing to their program. And we understand that if the player is not going to be on the roster taking up a roster spot, but that player should still have the means to get his education. If this is all about education, that should be the number one priority. And the NCAA and the schools have shirked that responsibility, yet they still get their tax-exempt status because of their educational mission. So it's very hypocritical in that sense as well. We're also trying to use some of those new revenues to bring forward a full scholarship that's actually full. You know, players will be the first people they'll tell you how fortunate they are. You know, they're very grateful for their scholarships. But the schools, although they call it a full scholarship, they've never fully committed to funding those. They actually fall short thousands of dollars every single year. And players are actually, they don't realize that. So they get slapped with these expenses, and it's really unexpected, making it pretty tough to get by. And finally, we want to reinstate an educational lockbox. Actually, the NCAA just let one expire. It was a class action lawsuit that we helped bring against the NCAA. And in the settlement, they put $10 million in the fund for players to continue their education if they didn't graduate. And for players that did graduate, they can go on to grad school and have other benefits. So obviously, after the settlement let the NCAA off the hook after 3 years, they just let it expire and didn't say a word about it. So we're fighting to get that back as well.
Mo, you want to go back here. Are you telling me that if somebody gets hurt in the field of play, that that school is not on the hook entirely for the medical care of that athlete?
That's correct. That's correct. That 100% optional. Now, with the NCAA, after we put a lot of pressure, we actually had a California Bill of Rights going back in 2003 that eventually the NCAA lobbied hard against and it died. But before it died, it put enough pressure for the NCAA to at least mandate that players have some insurance. But it doesn't have to be school insurance. So they, you know, a lot of players, first of all, they're on their parents' medical insurance. Some players are forced to pay their own premiums. But even with the medical insurance, the player from OU, you know, that his mom had medical insurance, but there were still thousands of dollars in deductibles and co-insurance, things that aren't covered. And schools, first of all, they don't have to provide any insurance at all. They can either force the player to pay the premiums, or, you know, the parents, for the kids who are fortunate, they can be on their parents. But there are always expenses that the insurance companies don't cover. And, you know, I just got contacted a couple months ago by a player from the ACC who had knee surgery, and there's $5,000 in collections right now. He's actually playing for a school in the ACC right now with his credit ruined.
What school was that, Ramogi?
Well, I can't say because they didn't want to go public, and if I were to say the school, I think it would be
okay,
obvious.
Okay, I gotcha.
The family's making a, they're trying to fight it.
How far in debt is he?
$5,000 in collections. Probably about 20 years old.
God.
And as adults, we know that this can affect things for the long term. You know, this kid tries to go out, get his degree, and tries to buy his first car. What's his interest rate going to look like on his loan? You know, eventually, even maybe potentially, if he's fortunate enough to try to get a house, you know, this could have consequences down the line for years to come.
How in the world can they justify that from a moral standpoint? There is nothing moral about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's greed and hypocrisy. And unfortunately, the people in charge of directing the money have a conflict of interest. They'd rather spend it on their own salaries and bonuses or something that can help a program overall in terms of recruiting the arms race, trying to build luxury athletic facilities. You know, they love the recruits, but they don't quite love the player once they get them. You know, it's all about getting the recruits and the talent. And much of that is fine, but we're talking about redirecting a portion of these new revenues to just provide the very basics of protections, making sure that players who go through the system actually have a decent chance to graduate. You know, half of all this, you know, all of the money that they produce, you know, the promise, the goal is to get an education. Half of these guys don't graduate. So imagine going through school several years and not graduate. Well, you spend thousands of dollars out of pocket. You might have had sports-related injuries that you've had to pay for or they're in collections, and you don't even get a degree at the end of the day. So we're trying to change just much of the structure of it, but it's very hard when money, so much money is at stake for these people that, again, have a very big conflict of interest.
Is this couple $1,000 deal that's just been introduced as part of the scholarships? And then the head of the NCAA says, look, we've got to get into the 21st century here with these kids and help them with some living money. Is this a step in the right direction, and has your organization had any impact in bringing this to pass, the pressure that you guys have put on?
Oh, absolutely. We've been fighting for this publicly for over 10 years. The last 3 years, we've actually produced studies, very, very shameful studies, exposing the shortfall. Most people didn't know that a full scholarship wasn't full. And, you know, we've been doing studies with Drexel University. We had a big report in September that came out, and we showed that what players get to live on, that 85% of players are actually living below the poverty line by about $2,000 a year. You know, just kind of painting the picture, and we showed that their free market value, if they had some, if they were allowed to get it, would be six figures. So definitely a disparity. There was a lot of pressure. And actually, the scandals have helped, ironically, because, you know, part of the issue is when you have financially desperate players, it's very easy for them to make bad decisions and take a couple $100 when they need a few thousand. So now it's a step in the right direction, absolutely. And, you know, this is the first potential raise that players have had in over 60 years. Is it enough? No, it's not. The NCAA knows it. It's still going to leave players at 100 FBS schools with an average scholarship shortfall of $1,500 a year or up to $4,000 a year. And at Tennessee, they're actually one of the biggest scholarship shortfalls. Right now, it's about $5,500 a year.
So
the other problem we have is these are all optional increases. You know, but assuming the best that every school did it, which they're not, but every school did it, even at Tennessee, players will still be stuck with over $3,000 out of pocket every year. Some schools will benefit. For instance, at Notre Dame, their scholarship shortfall right now is only $1,500. So Notre Dame could actually close their scholarship shortfall gap. Now, if Notre Dame is recruiting the same recruit as Tennessee, that gives Notre Dame a pretty big advantage. They can tell them, look, you don't want to spend $3,500 of your own money at Tennessee, do you?
Are you telling me that at Tennessee, families are coming out of pocket $5,500 for a kid?
Well,
explain
most
that
likely what's happening is kids have credit cards. They're taking out credit cards is what's most likely going on. They get no financial advising whatsoever. You know, they're told they have a full scholarship that's not full, and they get on campus. When these expenses start coming, most kids, they'll sign up for those credit cards, you know, on campus. They'll give you a free T-shirt and, you know, get some plastic in your pocket. And that's kind of the knee-jerk reaction for kids who aren't prepared. You know, as much as we disagree with that there should be a shortfall at all, at least these kids could be planning, if better informed, to maybe take out student loans, low-interest student loans that are deferred and subsidized by the federal government in terms of interest. But instead, you know, they're left on their own, and then people wonder why it's so easy to see all these NCAA violations pop up. So we have to take care of business. And, you know, just to put this in perspective, if there was a mandatory, fully funded increase that equals the cost of attendance at every FBS football player and basketball player in the Division I, you're talking about $47 million a year. And even if you were to double that for Title IX, you're talking about maybe $94 million. Again, there's almost $800 million in brand new money coming in every year for the next 12 years. And not one word about fully funding. They give an optional $2,000 increase. And again, it's a step in the right direction, but we're still going to have a lot of problems.
Well, Mogi, let me ask you something. Where's the national media on this?
Well, I think recently they've actually been paying more attention. You know, there's been a lot more scrutiny. I would say in the last 6 months, since the spring, it's kind of been a constant drumbeat where it's an awakening that, wait a minute, some of these things really aren't fair. Let's take a closer look. And, you know, we did our last study got a lot of attention. It was called The Price of Poverty. And it linked, a lot of the scandals anyways to not only financial desperation, but a system that really is broken. You know, the NCAA, they expect to be able to try to artificially suppress players' value. These guys, again, worth, you know, six figures. And they try to create a system that keeps them in poverty. And then they expect that people around them who can benefit from influencing these kids aren't going to offer them money to gain for themselves, and that the kids won't take it. It's a system that guarantees scandals. So, I think the national media is focusing more on this. I think we definitely don't want to let the NCAA off the hook with this, kind of a half measure in terms of the optional $2,000 increase. You know, I think right now is the time. What we're concerned about is this new money will quickly turn into old money because the ADs, their philosophy is use it or lose it. You know, they won't spend every last dime. And the university looks over while they're laying off professors and sees an athletic program sitting on $60 million. They're likely going to get tapped for that money. So it has to go somewhere, but it's always gone to salaries and capital expenditures like stadium renovations or, you know, multi-million dollar athletic facilities.
You know, when I hear you talking, and I've got to tell you something, I'm a conspiracy theorist from the word go anyway. I always think there's something lurking around the shadows. Okay, but when I hear you talking, I'm a big believer that a lot of times what we see in college sports is not necessarily what we get. Let me explain myself. This whole system is perpetuated, and gambling is a big part of this. Yet the NCAA that I'm talking about the governing body, they act like it doesn't exist. They want to put pressure on newspapers back in the day to not run lines, when everybody knows that college football on a Saturday afternoon, gamblers and folks gambling on games drives interest. It just does. Okay, so we can all agree on that. We're men. We can all agree on that. This system that you're talking about right now, where a school like Tennessee, you could be $5,000 in the hole, $5,500, you say, is the number, a shortfall with full scholarships. What's stopping a runner under this current system from getting to a couple of kids on any college campus when you're that short and you come out of poverty like many of these kids do? What's stopping somebody from getting to a kid and saying, hey, look, I know, like this weekend, Tennessee has MTSU. I know you guys are going to kill them, okay? But let's say you're playing running back in that game. If you'll just put the ball on the ground a couple times and keep the line, you know, keep it under that 28 margin. Ramogi, let me ask you something. Do you think, is it a concern of yours that that kind of thing goes on and that it's being perpetuated by that very governing body? Because that's always been a concern of mine. And hearing you talk, I've been pretty ignorant to this, to tell you the truth. I had no idea that it was this one-sided. Are situations like that, just how easily fixable these games are, is that a concern of yours?
It is, and it's actually interesting enough. It's a concern of the schools. I remember at UCLA, freshman orientation, we had a team meeting, and the FBI came in, and they went through case after case after case of point shaving scandals, and you know, in vivid detail, guys, how guys would taking advantage. Sometimes you talk about the runner. The runners could be a beautiful woman who, you know, coincidentally meets up with you at a bar and introduces herself. Next thing you know, you have drugs in your drink. You know, they got you in compromising photos, and now you're on the take. You know, you have a hard choice to make. But beyond that, I think just even if it's not so deliberate, you know, it was interesting. Josh Lux, the sports agent that basically blew the whistle on himself about paying players in the 90s in Sports Illustrated. He came out last year. He was up here at the congressional briefing. Now he's the agent of change. He's really trying to make things right. But he talked about who could be a runner, and anybody could be a runner. It could be a family member. It could be a teammate. It could be a trainer, you know, a coach, an assistant coach, a regular student on campus. There's no way to stop it. And I think unless you really begin to address the financial hardships, first of all, you know, you're going to be shooting yourself in the foot every time. But when we talk about the educational lockbox, one of the things we say is that this money can be directed into this lockbox, a trust fund, and be conditional upon players not breaking the rules. You know, give players incentive where they can see the light at the end of the tunnel, that if they abide by NCAA rules, that there could be a good payoff at the end, and they can get their degree. So it definitely is a concern, not just among players in our organization, but even the schools themselves. It definitely does happen. I heard it straight from the FBI, and that was, you know, at a time when it was even less money in the system. Now there's a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah. And you know these kids know, and that's why you're getting kids now to sign your petition in record numbers, and I want to talk to you about your petition. But the kids have to know that the gap between themselves and what is morally happening to them is just continuing to widen. Do you think the kids know this now?
Yes, they do. And we're actually, with the petition, part of the petition actually helps to inform them. You know, we've known there's new money coming in, but we never calculated it before. And with Drexel University, we did that study. On the petition, it cites, you know, the $750 million in new money. You know, we've given the players a table to circulate around themselves so they can see conference by conference, contract by contract. Here is the new money. And it was interesting when the college presidents got together in August, you know, of course they didn't have athletes in the presidential retreat to decide what reform would look like. You know, our players were talking about, well, are they going to ask us? You know, do we get a voice in this? And I kept them abreast of the study. And when we started finding out how much new money was coming in, they felt like, look, you know, we have to have a voice. You know, can we do a petition? What can we do? And so they decided to start circulating a petition among their teammates. And it was pretty late because, you know, by the time we got the numbers with the study, it was getting close to the NCAA board meeting that just met last week. And, you know, so there wasn't a whole lot of time to get it out. But, yeah, in a short amount of time, you know, they said players were signing up. It was a no-brainer. They were grateful and hopeful and wanted to put some pressure on the NCAA. And you know, at this point, they really want to go forward with the petition, kind of restructure it. Because that petition was focused on last week's board meeting where they were going to make some of these decisions. But they definitely want to go forward and keep voicing their concerns.
Let me go back to something here, because I've had a couple texts from people and people online tweeting me. Explain just here at Tennessee, explain the $5,500 shortfall. I mean, put that in plain English. What does that mean?
So a school can offer a full academic scholarship to cover the full cost of attendance. The athletic scholarships are capped by the NCAA below the cost of attendance, and at every school it's different. You know, it's not a standard, it's a standard formula, but it yields different actual dollar amounts. In that shortfall, you're talking about parking fees and incidentals. You're talking about academic supplies, things that can be covered in a academic scholarship, but not a athletic scholarship. So, for instance, if most campuses, if you're on campus, you don't receive any money at all. If you're on a full scholarship, you get the dorm, and then you get a meal card that you can swipe up to three times a day. Nothing for, you know, nothing for toothpaste, you know, soap, any of the incidentals that can be included in academic scholarship. If you move off campus, which most guys, they try to move off campus as soon as possible because they have no money to manage, no cash at all. You know, if you have cash, you have a chance. You know, you can try to shack up with as many guys as you can and squeeze in an apartment to try to get a little extra spending money so you can cover, first of all, the parking fees that you'll be paying when you park on campus because now you're commuting off campus. But, the incidentals, you know, the stuff that you need to get by, the graphing calculators or the printer ink, you know, things like that. So, those are things that are not covered, and they vary widely from school to school. And it's actually sometimes, you know, it really doesn't even coincide necessarily with the cost of living. We've looked at that. It's very different from campus to campus.
So at a place like Tennessee, where do you come up with that figure? Is that just based on what athletes have told you, or?
No, that's actually the Tennessee's report. Like, every school in the nation must report their numbers to the federal government, the Department of Education.
Good.
And all we did was pull it off their websites. The Department of Education has a database. And you can search all the different schools, find out what is covered and what's not covered. So these are actually numbers that the schools report themselves.
This is literally some of the most compelling stuff I think I've ever heard in my life of all my days of doing this. And I'm ashamed that we have not had you on more and been more of a champion for your cause, because your cause is such a valid one. When I hear you say that a kid from Oklahoma earlier in this segment got hurt playing in a game, and in a bowl game, and he's, what'd you say, $5,000 in debt?
He actually got hurt in a practice, Oklahoma basketball practice, and the out-of-pocket expenses for that knee surgery has added up to about $3,000 so far. And Oklahoma won't pay.
And the school's not paying it. It's if that isn't a plantation system, I don't know what is. I wouldn't know what a plantation system would be. Let me ask you something on your petition. You've had kids from so far. Kentucky, UCLA, Georgia Tech, Purdue, Arizona, and that was a couple weeks back in a 10-day span. Are you, and this is, these are basketball players and football players, what, any new schools to report, any progress on that front?
Well, actually, the players, they're kind of just finishing up the new language. You know, again, the last language actually cited October in the board meeting. You know, so the language is out of date. They wanted to actually change some of the language and bring more awareness, and hopefully we'll be able to report some good progress in, you know, later on. But the new petition is actually just beginning to be finalized. So, but in the meantime, they've been contacted, you know, by friends, you know, at a number of other schools, big schools that, you know, really want to do the same thing. We're like, wow, you know, I read the story. I saw what you guys did. You know, these players were speaking out. Not only did they get the petition signed, but they made statements, you know, with the full support of their team. And, it's something that has really never happened, you know, for players to get together and unify. You know, I was saying actually it was the week that the petition was published, That prior game, UCLA played Arizona. The football teams played, and they got in a big fight, you know, during the game, which had a lot of negative attention. But at the same time, I thought, wow, you know, these are guys that, as hard as they, you know, compete on the field, everything they have at stake, they work for. You know, they're united behind these basic goals, you know, fighting for basic protections and speaking out together. So I thought it was a good sign that this will continue.
You know, I just want to continue to wish you well and encourage you in what you're doing. You know, I'm of the opinion that sooner or later, Ramogi, we're going to turn the TV on and they're going to announce, here comes so-and-so, and one team's going to run out of the tunnel and the other team's not going to run out. And they're gonna stage a protest. And it seems to me that the NCAA is pushing a group like yours and this disenfranchised group of kids to this. Do you think that's the case? Do you think why are they playing hardball? I mean, the money's there.
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, our group doesn't advocate, you know, boycott or strike. We're not, but what I can say is that, they won't give us a seat at the table, and they actually denied a meeting request in the midst of all this reform talk and, you know, their supposed insincerity about doing right by the student athletes. They refused a meeting with me, which is the only group, you know, that represents student athletes. But I think as they close their doors, definitely we have to find other doors that will be open, whether it be the court systems or, like I said, we were in a congressional briefing a couple of days ago talking to lawmakers about the need for new laws. You know, I can speak for our organization, but I can't speak for a team that feels like they've been pushed enough that one day, yeah, maybe they won't come out. And at that point, the college presidents will have to answer this. But I think, it's just greed. I think I underestimated it when we first started out. Cause these have been the same issues for a decade, you know, that we've been fighting.
Yes.
But greed is a powerful indicator. Again, that conflict of interest, you know,
yes.
To give up a portion of some of these revenues to provide
yes.
basic protections, I think they see
yes.
it as taking money out of their pocket. And I think that's the reason why they're really taking that hard line.
Ramogi, you, and here's the funny thing about the irony. This dawned on you in 1997, which was really the advent of the Millionaires Club, as it were, in the coaching profession. But in that time, if you think about it, in that time, since then, $1 million is passe now. Every coach makes $1 million. Now it's 3, 4, 5. Who knows what Nick Saban's making? The proliferation of the TV money. I mean, you were wise to the fact that 15 years ago it was about money. Now everybody's getting paid. Coordinators are making close to $1 million in some case. Let me ask you something on the way out here. Tennessee had a young man, Inky Johnson, and I'm sure you're familiar with his situation, who was injured and permanently disabled in terms of use of one of his arms. And he's just a quality young man, and he's working over there, and they've I think done right by him. In a situation like that, where a kid is hurt and can't use one of his arms, long-term health care, are these schools compelled legally to cover that young man's health care? How does that work?
Well, actually, to the NCAA's credit, they established a catastrophic injury insurance policy for players that lose loss of motion or there's a dismemberment of a limb. So they do have long-term medical coverage for the catastrophic injuries. That was something we actually helped shore it up before the home health care benefit was really bad. There was a paralyzed player from Washington that wasn't getting any help at all, and we helped advocate for that and put pressure. They changed that, so now the players can actually get home health care and that as well. But there's a big gap. You know, if you're not hurt catastrophically but you have a chronic injury, there's nothing for you.
That's incredible to me. Because, and I don't know what the numbers are, maybe you do. Major college football players, surely, and these guys, when these guys get into their 40s, I was talking with Shazam Bradley about this. He played in the NFL as well, but he played here at Tennessee, and he was saying, you know, football, people just don't realize what a meat grinder it is on your body. And he's in his mid-40s now, and he's like, you know, man, there are days I get up and I wish I wouldn't have done it. And I've had other guys tell me that. Is there any numbers in terms of chronic injuries that follow people from playing college football? Is there anything out there numbers-wise?
I haven't seen anything. Unfortunately, we don't know. But it's interesting because, you know, when you're talking about the new TV money, just the Pac-12, they're going from getting $6 million a year to $20 million a year. Now, these are programs who some of them, you know, their total revenue is maybe $45 million a year. You know, this is a significant increase. So now is the time to address things like this, to set up insurance policies to take care of guys that maybe they're not catastrophically injured, but they have chronic issues and ongoing medical expenses. You know, now's the time to take a chunk of money and really address those issues, because absolutely, you know, football is definitely hard on your body. Even the other sports, you know, there's chronic injuries from players from other sports, but particularly football. And it's really getting scary with all this, you know, this new evidence about what concussions can do to you over time. And, which is a whole nother probably show, but, there's some serious concerns, and the NCAA is really not taking it serious. How can they try to make the public believe that they're going to bring comprehensive reform that's going to shock the world, and not mention health coverage?
Ramogi, God's blessings to you as you continue to do what you're doing. Anybody listening right now that wants to get involved with your cause, how can they?
Oh, they can go to our website, first of all, to learn more, to donate if they like. They can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. So they can definitely engage and follow along as well.
What is your website?
NCPANow.org. And on Twitter, we're at NCPANow.
NCTANow.com. Is that right? .org, okay.
.org.
Hey, Ramogi, thank you. God's blessings to you as you continue to do what you're doing. You're giving a voice to the voiceless, obviously. And have a great day, my friend.
Well, thanks for having me. I'll come back anytime.
All right, my friend, Ramogi Humah. You know, a couple things. By the way, we're live today here at Calhoun's, here in Turkey Creek. Man, just so blessed to be here today. That is some unbelievable radio that we just did with that guy. I knew this was a one-sided deal. Those of you who think that getting a scholarship is enough are crazy. You're crazy if you think that. You're crazy. If there isn't a ton, if there isn't a ton of game fixing going on across college football and college basketball, I'd be shocked. Okay? If I'm listening to that last segment with that guy and I gamble on major college sports, I'm thinking twice about the way I'm playing. That was really, really, really interesting. 546-2148, 888-859-1180. If you want to give me your thoughts on what you just heard, how can the NCAA sit there and have any leg to stand on, get on these kids for going out and getting $100,000 here, $100,000 there, when you hear something like that? Or go to, in the Alabama case, a T-Town Menswear, where a lot of those kids have obviously gone and gotten stuff. I don't blame those kids one bit. If a guy owns a restaurant or owns a store or owns this or owns that or owns a car dealership or owns whatever it is and he wants to give me something because I play football, I'm taking it. And when I heard that, I'm taking it. I'm taking it. 546-2148, 888-859-1180. That is a great segment. We're going to get him back. And if you have any thought or any questions for him that you want to, we'll get him, we'll grab him in a couple weeks. And We'll talk about it.